All right, we're going to say hello to another John. John, I think you're going in the same story direction I want to go on. What's your question or thought?
Hey, John, love the show. I love talking to attorney Mr. Leonard. I have two questions, Mr. Leonard, about this week's ordeal down in Atlanta with Fonnie Willis.
Okay.
My first is, it seemed as though when she was on the stand, she was doing everything that on TV you see you're not supposed to do. She was being very emotional. She wasn't answering the questions. You know, they always say ask and answer. I was once in a civil lawsuit. My lawyer, he wasn't the greatest. He liked to hear himself talk a lot. But he would always say, answer the question asked. Don't go off on a tangent. So that's right. My first question. The second one is, it seemed like the judge was kind of acting like her lawyer to try to kind of gave her a lot of leeway rather than would think another judge in another case with anyone else would have really kind of laid down the rules of asking and answering and those kinds of things.
Interesting.
I'll hang up and listen to my answer, but just love the show. And
thanks, John.
You know, I listen to a lot of shows on GN, but I really learn a lot when I listen to this one with Mr. Leonard. So thanks so much, guys. Take care.
Right. And Mr. Hansen, John. Thank you very much. But no.
Mr. Hansen, too.
Thanks, John. I appreciate the call. Yeah, Mike, can we, for people that don't know, and John's listening now to your response, can you just really quickly set up what this situation's all about?
Yeah, for those people who have kind of missed it, it's been kind of a big TV event, which is rare for litigation beyond TV. But down in Georgia, in Fulton County, there's the case against President Trump brought in state court by the state's attorneys, essentially the district attorney in Fulton County, Georgia. And to remind everybody, that's a criminal RICO case in which it's kind of a real sprawling indictment, but essentially alleges that, similar to other cases, that Trump's actions were an attempt to thwart the election. And in that case, you know, various people have already pled guilty. But what happened recently is some of the counsel for some of the individuals who are still in the case have raised the argument that the district attorney, Fonnie Willis, has a conflict of interest because of her personal intimate relationship with the special prosecutor in the case, Mr. Wade. So that led to hearings this week that were televised in which Ms. Willis, who's the district attorney down there in Atlanta, actually took the stand to testify.
And what do you think about John's questioning? I think a lot of people may have saw in the clips and she was kind of, she was just defending herself vigorously, I'll say. And it was fascinating to watch.
It was really good TV and very good reading. I thought it wasn't a good tactical choice. I mean, first of all, she's a little bit different than the average witness because knowing the case is going to be on TV, she had multiple audiences. She had her voter base for re-election purposes. She had the public at large who were kind of looking at whether this is a legitimate prosecution. And then, of course, just the issue that's raised, the conflict of interest. I don't think it was a good choice to go on there and essentially repeatedly attempt to avoid the question and get bogged down because eventually, you know, you give an answer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't see a lot gained. And particularly when the issue has been kind of, is this a legitimate prosecution? Should have been brought and all those sort of things. So I thought from a prosecutorial standpoint that she should have taken a much more sort of, I guess, professional demeanor and simply answered the questions.
Right.
Because she had to answer them anyways, you know, so I don't see what the benefit she got. She got a little bit benefit probably with her voter base and people were sympathetic to her in that why are we looking into the bedroom, so to speak, of a prosecutor and a special prosecutor? How is that relevant? So, you know, I think she thought personally there was maybe a political benefit. But overall, I think, you know, evading the question repeatedly did not lend itself to a finding, you know, by the public and maybe even by the judge that she's wholly credible. So I think it's a problem. I think John raises a good point. But what was your impression, John, of that strategy?
I didn't watch any.
John Hansen.
I didn't watch any of it,
okay.
I have to admit. I saw the clips. I just being perfectly honest, I didn't watch the whole thing. But when I saw in the clips, it just felt, you know, and I don't want to dive into it because each judge runs their courtroom differently and different cases are run different ways. But I feel like, they're not comparable, but like the judges in the case with Trump wanted to keep him completely on the line, and here she was kind of able to, like, wax poetic about a lot of things. Mike, we're going to put you on pause here because I don't want to run late to the news, but we'll pick up on the other side of that, okay?
Sounds great.
All right, that's Mike Leonard, federal defense attorney. We do have to hit this break. We got news coming up from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Then a second hour of Let's Get Legal on WGN on after this. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Federal defense attorney Mike Leonard still on the line with us. Mike, we were left before the news talking about what was happening in Georgia with Fannie Willis, who is the state's attorney. Am I saying that right, Mike?
Yeah, it's the same thing as our state's attorney, but I think there they call it the district attorney. Same thing.
Okay, so she is in charge of this RICO case against former President Trump. She had assigned was she the one that assigned the special prosecutor to investigate the former president?
She didn't assign it. My understanding is that the Board of Supervisors or somebody appointed Mr. Wade, who's the special prosecutor. However, I think she had some input. And the argument is that she had some obligation to make a disclosure about their relationship at the time he was appointed. That's one of the arguments they're making.
What do you think about that? Does it matter if the district attorney was sleeping with the special prosecutor, for lack of a better term?
Well, I think on its face it doesn't have a great look. Some would question, however, its relevancy. But what they've done is they've been trying to sort of couch this issue into a financial issue, basically arguing that, hey, because this individual was in a intimate relationship with the special prosecutor with the DA down there, that somehow that might compromise his independence, number one. And then number two, making the argument that he's being paid all this money. If he is then, you know, spending it lavishly on her, on vacations and things of that nature, that somehow she has a financial interest in his appointment. So it's a tough one. You know, it doesn't look good on its face. Whether there's really a conflict will be an interesting question for the judge. I think the judge will be troubled by, you know, the financial interactions. You know, on the one hand, there's been no proof, of course, that, you know, he was hired so that she could financially benefit. However, you could still make the argument that she receives an indirect financial benefit when he's able to take her on lavish vacations and pay for them, and the argument would be in part from money that he got being a special prosecutor. So that's kind of where they're going with this, but really, they're just trying to taint the entire case and throw mud at it because that's what they do. And I don't blame them for bringing the motion. However, even if they succeed and the special prosecutor is removed and or the DA is removed from having involvement with the case isn't going to go away. You're just going to have a new special prosecutor. You're still going to have the same DA who may be able to not have any involvement with the case, but you're going to get a new special prosecutor. So it won't change anything, but it may change public perception about the case and its legitimacy and things of that nature.
Why don't they just recuse themselves, both of them, moving forward?
Well, I think, you know, one, that they don't want to do that. I think they would view that as a concession, that there's some validity to the conflict, or there's some validity to the alleged financial interest or conflict of interest. So I think to do that, they would, you know, sort of be admitting defeat and leaving the suggestion that they did something wrong and therefore they had to recuse themselves. But that's a legitimate question, John. I just don't think they'll do it for political purposes and practical purposes.
Well, that's dumb.
And I think, go ahead.
I said it's dumb. What's I that? Mean, it's dumb. I, you know, look,
yeah, no, I agree.
I just, these cases are so important, whether you are on, I hate to say on different sides, but like, if you are a Republican, you're a Democrat, it's important that these cases, no matter what happens, they be run to the utmost of up and up, right? And this, even if it doesn't matter on the actual facts of the case, it is just squirrely enough that it's like, just get out of it and let people take over so there isn't even a hint or a whiff of a whatever.
Yeah, it's always a tough one. And, you know, you got to keep in mind that Willis is a political figure and is obviously concerned about things such as re-election. But, yeah, I think that might have been the move. You know, when the issues were raised, you know, make a full disclosure of their relationship and say, hey, you know, just to avoid the appearance of impropriety or the appearance of a conflict, we don't think it's necessary, but this is what we're going to do. We're going to appoint someone new. And that might have been a great move strategically, but that's not one they took. And then I think, you know, going into these hearings, which were televised, you know, I think some of the credibility of the DA, Willis, in this whole situation was undermined by her own testimony, because I don't think that she came across as completely credible. Not that someone's paying her off. I don't buy that for a second. But just the manner in which she answered questions and the combativeness, I just don't think that that helped the perception that this is a professional prosecution with no outside interest. So I think you might have hit it on the head. This may have been a mistake in terms of how they're going to handle this.
We had the Supreme Court oral arguments about whether President Trump should be on the ballot or not in Colorado. And I think the Supreme Court wisely said, okay, well, then if he isn't, what's next? And widened out the issue to whether this would disenfranchise voters in other states or really who has the authority to run elections. I thought the oral arguments were actually really fascinating. And I don't know if it's your takeaway, but I think this is an 8-1 or a 9-0 decision that Donald Trump is going to remain on the ballot.
Yeah, very interesting perspective, John. I think you're probably right. It'll be interesting if it's that much of a complete washout, you know, 9-0 or 8-1. But I think they're going exactly where you perceive them being on. It's hard to imagine a scenario where they would take him off the ballot, especially based upon the political makeup of the court. But even if we didn't have that political makeup, you know, how could any court say it'd be appropriate for individual states to take him off and then disenfranchise the choice of him, you know, being elected? Obviously, voters can still make the choice
right
not to vote for him if they think that's an issue. And I think you've hit it on the head. You know, that'd be a great solution. Just let them talk by their ballot, right, by voting or not voting for him. But don't disenfranchise everybody in that state. And all that does is then lend more issues about the legitimacy of the next election. So I think we all don't want that to happen, right?
Right, and there was just so many interesting, like, everyone should listen to oral arguments. I've been advocating this for a long time. Not only, if a case interests you, read the entire opinion, both the side that wins and the dissents from the justices. You learn so much. Listen to oral arguments. I know we're all super busy, so it's not always possible. But you learn so much, and, like, it's fascinating just to hear the discussion of the how Article 3 of the, or Section 3 of the 14th Amendment was written. And then this debate was it meant to limit states' rights or expand states' rights? And the idea that if Colorado, you know, if the court rules about this in Colorado, why this impacts other places. I just thought it was a very interesting, well-laid and well-argued position by both sides.
Yeah, I think you learn a lot from actually listening to the arguments. I think the tough part with those Supreme Court decisions is they're tough to read, you know, even for lawyers.
Yeah, right.
You know, to get through them, they're so long and they're so complex and they go into such historical analysis and use so much legal jargon, even for me, but certainly for lay people who aren't lawyers. But I do wish that, you know, important arguments like that would be broadcast live, would be readily, you know, available from a listening. You know, they're available from an audio standpoint very easily. But, you know, if they were just made available easy live and then if you could watch the video tip of it afterwards, I think that's the best way because you get so much insight from the questions that the justices ask the lawyers and how the lawyers respond. It is pretty fascinating.
Oh, I love it.
But, yeah, the actual written opinions are tough. They're a tough slog even for lawyers, but not for John Hanson.
Mm-hmm. Not for me. No, never. That's when I call you.
There was one other issue on the Willis thing that I think we were going to address, which I think the person who called in said, did we think it was appropriate how the judge handled the hearing? And he seemed to be letting Willis kind of go on in her answers and not cut her off. And
yeah, what'd you think?
The point, John.
Well, I was making the point of what we talked about a couple weeks ago, that in Donald Trump's case, which I believe it was the civil case, the judge was very limited on what he wanted the former president to answer. Is this just different courtrooms doing different things different ways?
Well, the one thing we got to keep in mind is that the hearing in Georgia that was televised, it's not a jury trial. It's simply a motion, a hearing on a motion filed by a party. So when people are giving testimony and they're going beyond the bounds of the question, there's no danger from the judge's standpoint that the jury is going to be prejudiced or influenced by stuff they shouldn't hear because there is no jury to decide it, right? The judge is going to decide the issue of the motion. So he's not too worried about being prejudiced by hearing something that he shouldn't because he doesn't care. You know, he can decide what's relevant, what's not relevant. However, I do agree with the listener, and I think your point is that it doesn't matter who the witness is. The fact that she's the DA, I don't think the judge was doing anyone a favor by letting her go on and not answer the questions. I think he should have intervened much quicker And he can do that in a very, you know, professional fashion. But
right.
just say, hey, look, you need to answer the question. You need to listen to the question. You need to answer the question. And do that, you know, early on. You know, let her go on a couple, which any judge would probably do. But then step in, because it does create kind of a circus atmosphere with her kind of giving speeches, just like obviously Trump tried to do. And it doesn't benefit the process, because ultimately they're going to ask her the same question 3, 4, 5, 6 times, and you're going to get an answer. So I think the judge certainly should have stepped in earlier. I think that was a mistake.
We've got 1 minute left, Mike. I know that the next thing that the Supreme Court might get involved in, as it turns to former President Trump, is whether there's the total immunity case, which Trump lost in a scathing review by the D.C. Circuit. The three judges there, they've appealed to the Supreme Court that the former president, or any former president, basically has total immunity to do whatever they want. The only check on the presidency would be impeachment by the House and then 2/3 of the Senate and removal from office. Do you think the Supreme Court might not even hear the case, or do you think they want to hear the case to finish this one once for all?
I would think they'll absolutely want to take it. It's such an important issue. And here's my prediction, John, and I'll bet you a sandwich from Bari, okay? I think they're going to reject his argument of total immunity and find some way to write an opinion that says that a president has limited immunity, but certainly not go with him. What's your prediction, John?
I think so, too. I think they'll take it. I think they'll issue actually both those rulings, one in favor of Trump, 9-0, one against 9-0, for being on the ballot, and total immunity. I think they'll release him on the same day.
Well, if nobody disagrees with each other, then no one can win a sandwich, John. You know, that's the downside of it.
Well, no, I stake my reputation on this show. Hey, Mike, I got to go. I appreciate your time tonight. Where can people reach you at? Obviously, you do federal defense work, but you also do whistleblower law, too.
Yeah, 312-380-6559. Thanks for having me on, John. Appreciate it.